Welcome to session 6 of PDH online course E281, Practical Plant Energy Reduction, audio version, meaning I'm reading the PDF form off the internet. Well, not exactly. I'm going to review what we did in the last one. We were talking about wastewater, and I wanted to emphasize the powerful key that this offers us into plant processes. We've gone around with this thermal gun and determined that we've got a high temperature discharge. This tells us two critical things. First, that there's a big heat input into the process. And let's go look at that and see if there's a way we can handle that and reduce the heat input into the process. Second, there's a big heat output from the process. We don't want big heat output from the processes. We want to capture that heat and use it for the process. And if a bell just rang in your head, yeah, we got a process that's taking in a lot of heat, and we got a process that's discharging a lot of heat. Can we preheat the stuff that we're heating using the discharge to reduce the amount of external firing necessary? So let's recognize this waste heat as a tremendous key into what's going on and opportunities to save energy. The new session starts with solid waste. And again, we're talking about the plant energy balance. Solid waste is one of the things we look at as a part of the energy balance. Solid waste is the total of scrap created by the process, reject product, and a wide range of ancillary materials not worth reclaiming. And we go into one of these sidebar things, process rejects as a measure of energy waste. The introduction to every course on quality control explains that labor is invested in work in process. If defects are found in an inspection stage late in the process, then the labor to that point has been wasted. Well, the concept applies directly to energy usage. Often substantial energy is invested in the product stream early in processing. If defects are found that cause rejects, the energy that has been invested is wasted, produces no benefit. I worked tech service for a plant that used electric arcs to melt sand and cast ceramic blocks to make glass furnaces. Glass melts at a lower temperature than ceramic. The plant had a 60% reject rate and was satisfied with the profit margins until EPA decided that the reject ceramic blocks, totally inert, were toxic. Now, regarding plant energy reduction, there have been substantial plant energy reduction by reducing the reject rate. Product, again back to the plant energy balance diagram. Product is the sum of saleable items produced by the plant. It's fairly easy to identify the product leaving the shipping dock, but very difficult to come up with a representative number for use in the energy summary. It's essential to do this to identify energy usage variances associated with production and energy usage variances resulting from weather, maintenance failures, raw materials, and work slowdowns. Some firms have a complete accounting unit that invests full-time efforts in tracking the energy invested in each unit product. That's not our goal here. On the other hand, we do need a monthly production rate to use as a reference for energy usage. Sidebar, avoid gaming. If energy reduction efforts are taken seriously, there will be many interested persons looking at the monthly energy summary and the dollars electric per unit produced, dollars natural gas per unit produced. There is a compulsion for every person who has studied business since 1970 to argue the source of the numbers instead of working to improve the plant operations. This is called gaming, or gaming the system. The numerator of electric dollars per unit production is hard to argue, but some will argue this. The denominator, units produced, is easy to argue. However, the argument is a distraction. Any one of a number of moderately accurate but consistently applied measures of units produced will work for energy use analysis. Efforts to modify the units measure method should be accepted. along with the requirement that the person suggesting the change rework all archive calculations according to the new procedure to maintain compatibility. Now, could you hear the tongue in cheek there? The guy who wants you to do it different doesn't want to invest any effort. He's just showing how important and how much smarter he is. And you give him something to do in return, you'll find it's a lot less interesting. Maintenance labor. Maintenance labor is a placeholder value for plant energy balance. We don't really care how much is spent on maintenance, but we must recognize that any changes approved for energy reduction will have a corresponding installation cost, which has to show up in maintenance or capital costs. It is very likely there will be long-term maintenance cost increases associated with energy reduction changes. Maintenance materials. Maintenance materials, again, is a placeholder value for plant energy balance. Each effort of energy reduction will necessarily have both a labor and a materials cost. Capital projects are big ticket items usually resulting from long-term planning and justification. Legitimately, big ticket installations or renovations for energy reduction should be placed in this category, except for the long-term planning and justification. The item is placed on the plant energy balance to remind everyone of the cost involved in the current task and perhaps to suggest that energy reductions can be combined under the heading of an existing capital project. Turnaround projects are a special type of projects in continuous process industries. For example, oil refineries typically schedule a shutdown every 3 to 5 years and delay major work for these times. Everything in between is band-aid maintenance. The turnarounds are closely orchestrated for maximum benefit from the minimum process interruption. The paperboard industry has a similar concept they call washdown. At the beginning of a cycle, the machines are clean and they make the whitest board. As the machines get dirty, they make dirtier and dirtier board, ending with kraft, which is not supposed to be seen by end users. After kraft, they shut down the mills and undertake washdown of the machines and maintenance, which requires steel shafts. Turnaround projects are included on your plant energy balance as a possible funding source, and to remind all that measurements across the shutdown shutdown process yield tremendous information on the process energy usage. The goal of watching and metering utilities at shutdown is to try to identify the leaks and the waste components not associated with product creation. Lighting, external, internal, security, quality control are listed separately because they are such a large electric user. Placing numeric usage and cost values on the high-level summary in energy balance help focus attention on the opportunities available in modifying lighting provided. Sidebar, you must reduce wattage consumed by lighting. The first step is to analyze bills to see how much kWh reduction is required to achieve 5% savings. The second step is to get a count of lighting fixtures and wattages and hours per day to see how many kWh per month are going to this use. The third step is to see how much fixture wattage can realistically be reduced. Expect to recommend 60% to 90% in every location except quality inspection and executive conference rooms. An extended discussion of lighting measures and needs is included below. Sidebar example number one of lighting reduction. As found, High Bay Manufacturing 400 watt metal halide fixtures at 30 foot center to center calculates out to 0.44 watts per square foot. As left, same High Bay Manufacturing, same fixtures, resourced from 277 to 120 volts, ballast bypassed, 55 watt self ballasted compact fluorescents installed for 0.06 watts per square foot. Example number two, as found, office floor, 4 tube, 180 watt fluorescents over each 8x8 cubicle, 2.8 watts per square foot continuous. As left, same floor, overhead lighting removed, each cubicle has a 32 watt fluorescent uplight on a switch and a 32 watt task light on a switch with 1.0 watts per square foot intermittent now. Is radical lighting reduction acceptable? Sidebar discussion. Two facts must be accepted before we can start a discussion of lighting levels. A, the eye's response to light levels is logarithmic. That is, a scene illuminated at 10 foot candles appears half as bright as the same scene illuminated at 100 foot candles. B, all measurements of lighting are bogus. That is, the same lamp in the same lighting fixture drops illumination from 100 foot candle to 5 foot candle over its life. This is normal deterioration of the lamp output and dirt buildup on the fixture. It's common knowledge that you can replace an existing 400 watt fixture with a new 175 watt fixture and increase the lighting level. Now, this is totally non-intuitive, so let me say it again. It is common knowledge that you can replace an existing 400 watt fixture with a new 175 watt fixture and increase the lighting level. We have returned to the starting point on the lamp depreciation curve and a clean fixture. This is called gaming the system. It's a very popular way to sell lighting retrofits because it works. If you take out a light meter, you can reduce the wattage and increase the light levels. Now, obviously, there's a limit to this, and we want to exceed that limit. We want to get to the lowest practical lighting levels that permit the process to continue without increase in defects and without a safety problem. But we're talking parking lot level lighting. We're not talking highly illuminated industrial areas. And that's what I'm saying. We want parking lot level where there's nobody around doing anything of importance. The real world situation is that we buy 400 watt fixtures. We pay for 400 watt electricity. But as time goes by, we get 200 watts, 100 watts, and 50 watts of lighting. Depending on the ends found condition, you may replace 400 watt fixtures with 55 watt fixtures and get an improvement in measured foot candles. Now, obviously, you're going to get a reduction in foot candles in some cases, and we're actually looking for those cases. So don't buy on to the, don't let me oversell you on the idea of replacing fixtures and increasing the light level. We're also looking for situations where we replace the fixtures and get reduced light levels, because that's where the watt savings and the monthly electric savings are. Motors on pumps, presses, milling machines, compressors, and fans are major users of energy at all plants. Some studies quote 60% of the energy usage as going to motors. Unfortunately, motors have been optimized for about 100 years. It's still possible to get a 5% efficiency improvement on a small motor, that's something less than 100 horsepower, by buying extra high efficiency units. It's very difficult, however, to get a 2% improvement on the large 100 horsepower plus motors that have already been optimized. Sidebar, look at energy savings from changing out motors to extra high efficiency. The first step is to look at the kWh reduction needed for the plant. The second step is to get tag numbers of motors, horsepower ratings, and hours per day to see how many kWh are going to this use. Note that continuous duty 1 horsepower motors will demonstrate more percentage savings by changing out to extra high efficiency motors than larger, already efficient motors. The third step is to ask the maintenance manager which brand motors consistently performs best in the plant and take the list to the local salesman for a quote on extra high efficiency motors and expected energy savings in kWh per year. Now again, this may not be intuitive. We're raised as engineers to go out and do calculations, do measurements, do calculations, and come up with an answer. There are times when this is not correct. Go out and gather the information and give it to somebody who already has a spreadsheet put together to give you the answer you want. It is so efficient to have him do it, and he's going to get the commission on selling the motors. Let him earn that commission. I say again, the third step is to ask the maintenance manager measure which brand motors consistently perform best in the plant, and take the list to the local salesman for a quote on extra high efficiency motors and expected savings per year. Now, you don't want a bottom line of you can spend $3 million and save $150,000 a year. You want to see which motors have the savings on it and cherry pick. Go for the ones that give you the payback. I mean, that's our business. And really, most, I won't say most salesmen, because the world has changed. There was a time when we had a very high professionalism among technical salesmen, and they were glad to participate in these projects because they knew they were making a good name for their company and a good reputation for their local office. There are still people like this around. Those are the people you want to deal with. Sidebar, extra high efficiency motors. A sample of extra high efficiency motor specifications is included below. Now, I went to Baldor because Baldor is known as the high efficiency motor guy. But over the years, I have had supremely good experience with Toshiba. Actually, the motor, I bought 150 horsepower, bought two 150 horsepower motors for induced draft fans, and both of them performed better than specifications, and the specifications were high. We had bid out the project, and I won't give you the name of the brand, but I kept going for a factory acceptance of the motors, and they couldn't pass their own acceptance test. So we were at startup, and we needed motors. I went on the, I'm trying to think if it was the internet then, but found a couple of motors that met my specification in a warehouse in Houston, because Houston supplies an awful lot of this stuff with an awful lot of high-speed requirement. Got them shipped to Ohio, got them installed. We met the startup date, and these motors were sweet. They ran cool. The current draw for the rated horsepower was lower than we expected. I mean, just real sweet motors. So I'm quoting Baldor here because I've had good experience with them. I'm telling you, I've had real good experience with Toshiba. There was a day when General Electric was the best motor you could buy. I don't know if that's still the day. Siemens tries real hard. I would suggest looking at them. And again, I went back to what I said in the narrative on the text was, talk to your maintenance manager. Find out what works in your plant. That tells you what motors respond well to your process requirements and what local supplier is giving you good service. Those are the people to talk to. But I'm giving you a set of specifications on 10 horsepower motors from Baldor, and you can see things about the efficiency and things about the different types of motor that are available. As we look a little further in the Baldor online information, they're often 92.4% efficiency for a 10 horsepower motor, and they're calling that extra high efficiency. And that's what you want to do. You want to find out what you can save over the motor you've got now. There was a time when 80% efficiency was considered good efficiency. Well, that's not today any longer. Also, Baldor had a very interesting comment, which I'm still trying to digest. They recommend NEMA A high-efficiency motors for pumps and compressors. Now, a long time ago when I went to college, they told me NEMA B had high starting torque to handle pumps and compressors better. But the world is changing, and this is worth investigating. And once again, we talked to the local representative to find out what he recommends for a high efficiency application. And high efficiency means we want to use less electricity each month. Sidebar again, 5 to 30% energy savings are available on motors by shutting them down. Now, you would think that's 100% saving, but that's not the case. We're talking about shutting them down when they're not in use. Most processes, and I'll say all the processes I'm familiar with, and certainly I am not universally knowledgeable, but processes go on and off. And when they're off, you turn off the motor and you save a lot of electricity, all the spinning losses of the motor. Let's see what the text says. There are two ways to get immediate savings by shutting down motors when they're not needed. First method is scheduling. This works when there are a bank of pumps, boilers, or compressors feeding a manifold to supply the entire plant. In years gone by, all pumps were kept online and all loaded proportionately as the plant demand increased. Same thing for boilers, compressors, and chillers. Now again, the concept here is you got 8 compressors in a row, and as the plant goes into heavy production and more air is demanded, each of the compressors takes more of the load and they crank up to full capacity. Well, what I'm saying is the modern approach is to have one or more base-loaded units running at capacity all the time and bring additional units online as plant demand increases. This may almost certainly, this will almost certainly, require modifications to the controls, and they're not real expensive modifications. Maybe $10,000 for the control box that handles your bank of compressors or boilers or whatever we're talking about. Additionally, there may be severe conflict from operators and supervisors who want to keep boilers on low fire to avoid wide temperature swings and ensure rapid response. However, power-operated valves can keep feed water flowing through the boilers even though the burner, main feed water pumps, and fans are off. Now, what I'm saying is the old way of running the plant was the easy way of running the plant. The new way of running the plant is paying a lot more attention to details, working a little harder, and saving some energy along the way. Second method of shutting down motors is during idle periods. An unloaded motor spinning at rated speed with process mechanical losses but no process value will measure 5-30% energy usage compared to time when it's contributing to the process. The startup losses in a well-maintained machine should be minimal and not contribute to an early failure. First step is to get at least 7 days of electrical amps charts for the machines, so you know the cycle between loaded and unloaded. This course suggests the AEMC CL601 to measure one phase only. I've been using these for, oh, I think it's 20 years now, and they're a sweet gadget. Very rugged. They hold up to being dropped. They hold up to being abused. They come back real dirty with good data. And I'm sure there are other good gadgets out there. My problem is most of the good gadgets are real complicated. And when I'm out on a production floor with an awful lot of things happening, I don't want to have to think. I want to stick it in there and push the button to start it. And that's how the AEMC works. Most horrible experience in my career was when I was in an energized substation yard, stooping my head because there were 14,000 volt conductors drooping over my head, and I'm trying to put a clamp on the output of a power transformer, and I had to set the configuration numbers for it. Now, I'm not going to tell you which brand this was, but that's not the way to do an energy survey. Never do that again. That's what I learned from it. Second step is to examine the trend charts and look for periods exceeding 10 minutes downtime. If that's the case, and you can shut down the motors and bring it back on, you can save money. Calculate the monthly energy savings. KWH equals volts line to line times current on one line times the square root of 3. Air compressors, back to discussing the inputs and outputs on the, and internals on the energy balance diagram for the plant. Plant air compressors in a modern plant can approach the energy usage of boilers in an early 20th century plant. The energy source is clean, easy to maintain, and a chosen power and cleaning source for a wide range of process equipment. The downside is that air, being clean, does not remind maintenance people to repair the leaks. In addition, most leaks make ultrasonic noise rather than sensible noise. The energy losses from leaks approach those from steam leaks. Compressed air distribution, the downstream from the compressors. Compressed air distribution is piping connection, regulators, and hoses between the compressor and the process machine. Sidebar, find and fix compressed air leaks. The first step is to buy an ultrasonic detector and have a maintenance person trained by the salesman to use it. It's extremely logical and not burdensome. Plan on tracing every compressed air line in the plant. selecting an ultrasonic leak detector. It's essential to get earphones and a parabolic pickup accessory. Ultrasonic detection is qualitative, not quantitative. The sound clearly indicates to a trained person if you're listening to a compressed air leak, a steam leak, or background machine noise. The magnitude, however, is greatly affected by the direction and reflections and not a good indicator of anything. The Amprobe ULD-300 is a totally satisfactory first try. It is worth paying a little more to buy from a local representative who will provide a walkthrough and hands-on training for your selected maintenance persons. The features of a $5,000 to $10,000 instrument will provide no value whatsoever. A can of fluorescent spray paint with a 10-foot operating stick is extremely useful. Let's talk about steam leaks and how to identify them and recapture the energy loss. But let's do that when we come back from a break.